authors. I'm Joanne Morrell, children's and young adult fiction writer and author of Short Nonfiction for Authors. Thanks for joining me for the Hybrid Author Podcast, sharing interviews from industry professionals to help you forge a career as a hybrid author, both independently and traditionally publishing your books. You can get the show notes for each episode and sign up for your free author pass over at the Hybrid Author website to discover your writing process, get tips on how to publish productively, and get comfortable promoting your books at www.hybridauthor.com.au. Let's crack on with the episode. Hello, authors. I hope you're all keeping well in whatever part of the world you reside and listen to the podcast in. Today's interview is with Deborah Pike on what to do after your first novel is published. And we chat Deborah's literary contemporary fiction work, The Players, key steps authors can take to keep momentum going once their first novel is published, strategies Deborah's found most effective growing her readership after launching her debut book, struggling with the what's next feeling after publication, how authors can balance marketing their first book while working on their next project, and much more. So in my continued author adventure this week, I wanted to touch upon the words I've been pondering, which are believe, trust, and create. And I wrote a little passage in regards to them. When things are hard, it can be hard to believe, trust, and create. We let ourselves get swept away in the dramas of the outside world or our inside world, as the case may be for me this week. What we once thought our minds can sway under the layers of life being laid down upon our beliefs, our trust, and what we create. Our ideas, decisions, goals, aspirations, our future begins to waver. It just goes to show the magnitude, the power our minds hold and how we set them to succeed. It can be truly hard to trust when we simply don't know. This is part of the magic of creating. What would it mean to believe in yourself wholeheartedly as a creative? And I'm talking about this from a career perspective as always. Believing your work has the power to touch or change someone's life. Or change your own. Believing this is the path you are meant to be on. And against all odds, against the mystifying doubts and pressure of your inside and outside worlds, you don't waver. You go after it with untouchable perception instead. You trust this is the thing you're supposed to be doing, so you continue to do it. But if, like me, you struggle sometimes, you grapple with your own thoughts and feelings of believing in yourself and trusting yourself and in creating. This is when you should look for inspiration in others. Look for signs of what's being shown to you on social media. What messages are people telling you? What words are being spoken to you or shown to you? What music is being played to you at the very minute you are questioning or struggling or floundering to guide you back to where you belong? I've had some truly trying times this week, personally and emotionally. And then there's been some real moments of clarity in between from what I take as signs. Recently, in the very moment I was having tearing thoughts about my cause, I received a message from a page I follow on LinkedIn, a positive thoughts page, which sent me a powerful quote and a passage which I truly connected with. Now, some might choose to ignore this or think it's kooky. I choose to acknowledge and move forward. So I choose to believe that this is a sign from somewhere telling me to ignore myself and continue to believe, trust, and create. I remember another trying time last year when things in my personal life felt particularly difficult. I got into my car to go where I needed to go, and when I turned the radio on, this song was playing. Things can only get better. You know that one from the 90s? It was a childhood song of ours. It's sitting having a crappy day, and then you switch the radio on, and those are the words that are playing. Things can only get better. How could you not take that as a sign that things are gonna get better? I definitely laughed, and I took those words as something someone from somewhere outside of my consciousness was telling me. So why am I saying all of this to you now? In the hope that anyone listening can relate. If you're having a sucky author day, it's not coming together. You feel like your book is crap. You're doubting yourself, your abilities in any aspect of your life. Like they tell us as children in Crossing a Road, stop, look, and listen to the world around you for signs that you're okay. You're doing all you can and you're exactly where you need to be. And as I've always said, as an author, it will all come together in the end. It's a bit like my upcoming interview with Deborah Pike on what to do after the hype of your first novel dies down. It's in these moments you might feel empty, lost, or in despair. And a quote from a nonfiction book, Author Fears and How to Overcome Them. We're all feeling the fear, but doing what we love anyway. And you can too. So after our sponsor, let's crack on with the episode. So
Thorn Creative, where beautiful websites for authors are brought to life. No matter what stage you're at with your writing, your stories deserve a dedicated space to shine. Whether you're just starting out or have a bookshelf full of bestsellers, your website is the hub of your author business, binding everything you and your books offer together. Thorn Creative can nurture all aspects of redesigning your old site or start afresh from the initial design. They can provide ongoing hosting and maintenance to marketing your books online, saving you time, money, and stress trying to wrangle your site yourself. An author website built by Thorn Creative can easily direct readers to your favorite retailers, your publisher, or simply set you up to sell to them direct. The options are endless. Thorn Creative have worked with many authors across all genres and know what goes into good, functional, working author websites to sell books. Head on over to thorncreative.com.au/websitesforauthors to read author and publisher testimonials and to see what they offer and some of the sites they've created.
Pike is a writer and academic based in Sydney. She grew up in Northam and Perth, Western Australia. She has an honours degree in English from the University of Western Australia and a PhD from the University of Sydney. She is an associate professor of English literature at the University of Notre Dame, Sydney, and is a winner of an Australian Government Award for university teaching. Deborah has travelled widely and lived in Paris for several years, where she held positions at Shakespeare and Company Bookstore, the Organisation for Economic Cooperation and Development, the University of Paris 7, and the Paris Institute of Political Studies. She is the author of The Subversive Art of Zelda Fitzgerald, which was shortlisted for the AUHE Award in Literary Criticism. The Players, published by Fremantle Press, is her first novel. Welcome to the Hybrid Author Podcast, Deborah.
Thank you, Joanne, and I'm thrilled to be here.
We're so honoured to have you. Absolutely fabulous bio. But can you tell us from your studies how you came to be a writer? And I would love to hear about your time working at the Shakespeare and Company bookstore. My mum bought me a bag back from there once. I haven't actually ever been, but I've heard it's really quite, it's hard to get into, isn't it? It's quite busy and manic.
It is these days. Sure. A pleasure. Quite a long story about how I became a writer. I think it all began with having a very vivid imagination. I've been making up stories since I was tiny. I've read a little bit about play because I've written some kind of scholarship on play. And there's an anthropologist called Johann Hausinger who says that every act of play is a making of narrative. So as children play, they're making up stories constantly. So that's my best and most impressive qualification as a writer. That I loved to play as a child and imposing narrative everywhere on everything. I kept diaries from about the age of 13, not for any love of literature and writing, but because I wanted to capture things. I think I began my diaries at 13. On New Year's Eve, I was sitting on top of the roof of the family home and was like, oh, look at these fireworks. I have to capture them. So I think there was also the desire to capture beauty, to capture things that are lost. And I took this with me, of course, as I went on into my studies at university. I did a course in poetry with the wonderful Dennis Haskell, and that really imprinted on my mind the extraordinary capacities of language, the exquisite power of poetry and words. And I kept writing, and I wrote lots of things, but I was far too terrified to do anything with them. So I just amassed lots and lots of words and bits and pieces. And put them under my bed, like, you know, what's her name, the poet, Emily Dickinson. But of course, I have written academic work because once getting a job at a university, it's publish or perish. So I have published some academic work, but it's actually taken me until midlife to write something creative, simply because I've been too terrified to do anything. But as David Bowie once said, if it's not terrifying you, then it's not worth doing. So,
yeah, I love it. And do you still have all your diaries and things? Have you kept those?
I do. I have so many boxes, probably over 150 of them, sort of hardbound notebooks. It's a storage hazard and very impractical. And I've moved, I don't know how many times in my life. So I've dragged them, you know, all across the country, partway across the globe. But I don't know. Cockroaches have even eaten some of them as well. But
you'll ever use them again, or is pure for going back in your young?
I won't. I don't. I think, yeah, I mean, occasionally, you know, if I've taken some notes or something, if I'm on a train or I capture something that I might be able to use, I might dive back in like a bowerbird, but I try not to attach myself to them too much. There's something a little zen about having written it and then it blowing away. But of course, I've kept them all. So
yeah, this is the way.
That's right. In fact, I was talking with a friend of mine who wanted to do a little one-act play, and she was talking about all the stuff that she has, because she has come from generations of Ukrainian Jewish culture, and she was talking about all the stuff they have and the stuff they have to put in the middle of the circle that they have to look at and examine as part of her identity. And I was thinking of my diaries as well as all this kind of stuff. And I was thinking, well, maybe, you know, maybe we should write a little comedy about all our these things we carry around that we should probably kind of do something with, or maybe just have there. I'm not sure. Yeah. So
good idea. one worth pursuing. Well, today's topic is what to do after your first novel is published. So we'll start by, if you can tell us about your novel, The Players.
Thanks. Yes, The Players is a work of literary fiction set in Western Australia. So it's an ensemble narrative about a group of young amateur actors who come together one summer to put on a play. They stage it, and then the novel traces their afterlives and their interconnections across the globe over 10 years. So they explore ambition, desire, they confront their past. It's a novel very much about the power of art. There are six main characters and two support characters, if you like. So there's Veronica, who is the daughter of a Czech immigrant, first in her family to attend university. There's her boyfriend, Sebastian, the wealthy and ambitious Sebastian. There's Cassie, his friend who's desperate for attention. There's Joshua, a laborer on the orchard. There's Gloria, originally a refugee from Timor-Leste. And Felix, an exchange student from Germany who directs the play. So it's a big, diverse cast of characters. Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. And how did you keep a hold of each of the characters now?
That's a lot. They kind of took over my mind, but only in certain spaces, thankfully, not during my day job. How did I keep track of them? Quite a bit of difficulty, but I post-it notes, charts, having to take notes, stopping in the middle of doing things if I have a sudden revelation of where they should be or what they should be doing or what should happen next. I plotted each character with his or her own narrative, like a kind of arc separately, and then wove them together. Yeah. So it's a kind of narrative mesh.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. And how long did it take you to write the whole thing? Was it a long process?
In some ways it was. The idea came many years ago because I heard these voices talking to me, like when I was cycling or walking or swimming or probably, and also when I was doing things that I didn't want to do and I'd rather. So that happened, a long time ago, I think. But I really didn't get, and I jotted little bits and pieces down over the years, over several years. It was only really during COVID when I actually had the time to pull it all together. So I had all these scraps and fragments and bits and pieces. And during COVID, I did charts and arcs and brought it all together with the holiday period, and it was quite extensive across 2 years when we couldn't really go anywhere. I went into the orchard and rehearsed with my characters and then traveled the world with them. So it was really a deep and wonderful experience to do that. So
yeah, I like that, especially in the middle of COVID, like a not so nice experience, and then you're lost in a greater experience, which is lovely. So no, that's great. So you published in 2024, last year with Fremantle Press. Very exciting. So after the excitement of publishing The Players, there's a lot of excitement and hype and buzz. Did you find, what are some of the key steps authors should take to keep momentum going after maybe that hype and buzz kind of dies down application? Did you find
that? Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the key is to keep the conversation going. So I'm glad to be having a conversation. Yeah. So I've written a work of literary fiction, which asks the reader to entertain a kind of multiplicity. So in reading it, they'll need to hold that, using your word, and develop a sensitivity to a plurality of characters. So it was always going to be a slow burn book in a way. So I've got that being a literary work. The second thing is that I'm completely unknown to the reading public. So as a debut author, and thirdly, I published with a very reputable yet small press. So these things mean that the challenge of kicking along the book is there, if you like. I think all authors do. But it also means that playing the long game is really important. So obviously, social media is a great place to post activities. I was very fortunate and sought help from Meg the Marvelous. I think that's her official name. From Literary Inspired. She also assisted with a website. She's like quite ingenious at tagging and hashtagging, market speak and things that, you know, an introspective, convoluted person such as myself maybe not so strong at. And it's been great to work with her. Also, I would advise people, once their book comes out, treat that push a bit like a job. I know it is, you might have produced a heartbreaking work of staggering genius. It may be your baby, it may be your life and soul, but it also is just a product. And in some ways that makes it easier to think about. You just become quite pragmatic. Well, you know, you visit bookstores, you see how it's going, invite people to review the book, send it out for review as well. Use networks, for example, places that you might have visited or studied, but your hobbies, your sporting clubs, families, family friends, workmate, I think a great reader and spread the word. Friends of friends can spread the word. The most unusual people can come up to you or people you haven't seen for years and say, oh, I read your book. You're like, oh, when they pass on the word. I think it's worth sending your book to people from book clubs or spend a bit of time identifying the readership of the book, who might enjoy it, what sort of groups of people. I've been involved in a few like competition giveaways. If people do something or other, then they get a copy of the players or...
Do you find that stuff works quite well or...?
I think so. Yeah, it creates a little buzz. I was, pitching to podcasts, pitching to festivals, getting help with some of those things if you need it, keeping spreadsheets for follow-ups, which I don't do, I recommend. I'm in awe of people who are good at spreadsheets. Pitching to libraries as well. Libraries can be good. So even if people aren't buying your book, they're borrowing it from libraries and then they can talk about it. Yeah, that's the main thing. I think getting a whole bunch of author copies is a good idea and sending them out. I know that publicity departments of presses do that as well, but they're also very busy. So I think it's great if the author can, especially obviously if they're self-published, to do that as well. So...
How much? I know it varies from different publisher to different publisher. Are they pretty upfront with, this is what we do for your book, you're welcome to do this, you know, because obviously it depends, I suppose, if they've got a publicity team. And then also after the book's out, especially, and they've kind of, like you said, sent it on to, I know, like Westerly Magazine gets reviews of books and they've sent it out to their channels. Is that then the publisher doesn't do much else after that? They're kind of stepping back. They're on to their next project.
I think so. I think there's my editor at Fremantle Press said a book has about a year in it. Although I've met the marvelous Sue Boyd at Geraldton Writers Festival. Her book's been going, she's been peddling a book for 4 years and it's still like selling really well. And she goes and talks about her life as a diplomat and at schools and it the gift that keeps on giving. So good for her. But yeah, roughly a year to you squeeze the life out of it. Yes, I had a short meeting with the press about publicity and they very kindly put me onto Better Reading. So I've got a little video on there, which was really nice of them. I am aware that it is a really small team. I don't know how many books they have a year, many, many books. And there is just one publicity person. There's an events person. And that sort of thing. But there are many, many things that they're juggling in publishing houses. So I think the more an author can do, the better. But yes, they're always there for support if you need something in particular.
I've always found, you know, their team and
going to events and know a lot of Fremantle Press authors, it feels like it's a community, and they have like events that are quite different where they throw most of their authors together in a big theme. And works really well for them, it does.
Yeah. Well, that was really effective for the players having a launch in Perth with Brooke Dunnell. Don't know if you know her.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. We had a huge event. I don't know, 150 people came and it was a wonderful highlight. So yeah, they're great at creating buzz and making community. That's true. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. So, you know, many authors do struggle with the what's next feeling after publication. And obviously you've just listed off so many cool marketing things, but it's a lot. How do you and how do you think people should go balancing marketing their debut book, their first book, while working on their, you know, their next project as well? It's a hard juggle, I think, especially.
It is really tricky because it takes a lot of time and energy. Especially when you've got like a more than full-time job and family commitments and perhaps trying to work on another book. It can be hard to imaginatively move on if you keep sort of getting dragged back into the thing you finished 2 years ago. I think it requires considerable discernment and determination to move on. I think in the end, if you want to continue being a writer, you simply have to get started on something else, get curious, do what you need to do, book time away. You know, or what else? Do whatever works, really. Writing groups, do another writing course. Even if you feel like you know it all, you never do. And there's always great people to meet. It's a good prod. I think the key is just to keep at it, a bit like pushing your book, keeping the conversation going with working on the next thing, is to keep your toe in, keep at it. Yeah. And also to be not focused, so focused on outcome and output, I don't think, but just to be in it is the most important thing, whatever happens with it.
Yeah, really well said. Do you think, obviously gearing up to publication of the first book, and like your publisher sort of saying you've got like a year, maybe giving it all, promoting the book and getting it out there for that year, and then starting to draw your attention to the next work, or maybe scheduling less time on promoting the other book and more.
Well, that can be quite wise. That sounds very wise to me. I keep getting asked, oh, what are you working on now? What's your next book? And it's a bit like after someone's just given birth, it's like, when are you having your next kid? And they're just like, oh, well, I'll just sort of sit with this one and look at it and give it a bit of attention and recover and see if I can actually manage it first. It's funny how people keep asking you that. And it's a sort of, it's a sign of your psychological health. If you're able to move on, if you're not kind of stuck on this thing that you've just done, that you want everyone to read.
Yeah.
So that sounds very sensible to wait a year, I think, to let the thing you've produced breathe.
Yeah.
It can be tricky if it doesn't go as you expect. So that's when I think people advise, get working on the next one. I think it is good to keep momentum, though, especially if you are in the writing world and you've published something. It's probably a good idea to keep that energy going by writing something else if you can. But I'm not a believer in spitting things out and writing any old thing. And so some people need a much longer time, and that's perfectly respectable.
It's hard, and it's really hard because some people, I think I'm guilty of this, it's probably not allocating enough time to promote a work and getting lost in the other work or something like that. And then I think other people can get too far gone in promoting their work, so they don't end up starting something else. And
I agree.
There's so many different variations that you can get lost in, isn't there? Whatever.
There are. I don't know if there's a right formula, or it's just trial and error. I mean, I've learned so much in the year my book's come out, so much about so many things. Yeah, it's been really wonderful. Look, I get to speak to you. And one of the great highlights is meeting other authors. They're just, it's been, and they're really very supportive because they've been through it. Yeah.
Sounds like, you know, you've done a lot of back work. You've cornered every avenue, I think, that you can. I mean, you've shared so much. Would you like to share any other strategies or anything you found growing your readership after launching your book or anything like that?
What else is there? I was very lucky to have two brilliant launches and wonderful people supporting my work. I just was incredibly blessed. But other things you can do, yes, palling up with authors, getting up to mischief with authors, proposing events, sending your book out to people who you might think are interested. I do know places like the ABC Book Show, they get like, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of books a week. And, you know, these big book reviewing places just get a crazy number of books. It's extremely hard to feel special. But just to keep at it, to keep going, because you never really know who will respond to your book.
Story. He was like a gentleman. I think he self-published his book, and I couldn't tell you what it was for the life of me, but it was his daughter. She'd taken a picture of him. I think he was maybe writing the second installment, and he'd written this 10 years prior, and apparently I think it sold quite well and whatnot, but because of her post on TikTok just saying, my dad's written this really great book 10 years on, and from her post it just went crazy, and he ended up selling like loads, and that was like 10 years on. So I love those types of stories because your book can be just you just never know. You just
can have a second life.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's so exciting.
Yeah. First life 10 years later.
Yeah. Or debut author Lisa Kenway, who wrote All You Took From Me. She had a similar story, although her book isn't an old book. I think it came out the same time as mine. Someone put it on TikTok, had found it in the local bookstore, which was near her. And bingo, thousands and thousands of copies sold as a result. And that was just marvelous. So you do hear these stories, which is great.
Holly Hoover, what does she say? She commends anybody that shared her book on TikTok because it was, or, you know, social media. It was the fans that made it go viral the way it has for her career. It's not her pump, like pushing it. It was other people holding up her work and whatnot. So, yeah, that's awesome. Absolutely great. Well, honestly, Deborah, thank you so much. You've shared so much. I'm not going to say, what are you working on now? Unless you would like to. You
are that's good. On. I'm glad. Good.
But you were right, because you do feel the need when someone has just had a baby in real life to say, are you going to have another one?
Yes, they need a brother or a sister. What? Get moving. What's wrong with you?
That's like the players. It sounds absolutely fabulous. Can you share with the audience, where can they discover everything, you know, you do on and offline?
Well, I have a website, deborahpike.com, and Instagram, authordeborahpike.com, and just author Deborah Pike, isn't it? I'm not sure. And I have a sort of slightly lonely looking Facebook page. I think people are well and truly graduated from Facebook to Instagram these days. But yes, I'm out there. So yeah, come and get your copy. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you cry.
Oh, that's fantastic. Deborah, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Joanne.
The world we knew is gone. Humanity's future rests on Horizon Moon. Chemical Rocketeers is a sci-fi podcast that dares you to embark on the ultimate journey of survival, exploration, and triumph against the odds. In a post-apocalyptic universe, the Rocketeer colony stands as humanity's last hope. They're a resilient group of survivors who are fighting to rebuild civilization after Earth's nuclear devastation. Each mission they take is a test of courage. Every choice, a battle for survival. From heart-pounding action to moments of unity and hope, Chemical Rocketeers invite you to explore an intricate world where mysteries unfold, alliances are forged, and the spark of humanity's legacy burns bright. Join Rocketeer Colony and become a part of the story on Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts. For exclusive content and behind-the-scenes glimpses, find them on Instagram and TikTok. The universe is waiting. Are you ready to rise with the Rocketeers? Add Chemical Rocketeers to your podcast playlist right now.
There you have it, folks. The marvelous and exceptional Deborah Pike. What an absolute joy to talk to Deborah, whose book is such a beautiful and remarkable addition to our shelves. So if you haven't already, go and check out all she does. Next time on the Hybrid Author Podcast, we have fiction podcaster from Chemical Rocketeers podcast, advert you just heard, Devin Blair, chatting the power of podcasts to connect people through compelling storytelling and meaningful conversations. Devin Blair is a graduate in chemical engineering technology and a proud member of the National Society of Leadership and Success. After a few life-changing experiences, he made the leap into the entertainment world. The journey wasn't linear, but through trial and error, he's found his way into podcasting.
And that's how Chemical Rocketeers was born. Today, Devin travels across cities and countries, pushing boundaries in the sci-fi audio space and working to leave a lasting mark through immersive story-driven content. I wish you well in your author adventure this next week. That's it from me. Bye for now.
That's the end for now, authors. I hope you are further forward in your author adventure after listening, and I hope you'll listen next time. Remember to head on over to the Hybrid Author website at www.hybridauthor.com.au to get your free author pass. It's bye for now.